Folks, welcome back to the iHealth channel, iHealth Radio, the NBC Network, the Podcasters Network, channel. We're just going to have a terrific morning and a show today with my guests because, in life, we tend to be tense and there are a lot of pressures. And our expert today will kind of guide us into, the world of pressure and how to deal with it. But his background is so versatile, so diversified, so amazing, that he's going to be able to drive us, through a discussion about all these things that we can do and maybe reach peak performance, maybe get a balanced, lifestyle, whatever it is. We're going to get you guys through this discussion today that's going to be really taken to the bank. Now, with me, I have Brian Haidt. He's literally a modern day Renaissance man, a sports and performance psychologist, thought leader, faculty member, stunt man, a lot of movies. Or films, that he has to his credits, so a lot of stuff. He's a keynote speaker, an author. I can go, further on this, but I'll leave that to him. Brian, welcome to the show, man. And tell us about yourself, really, because I can't really give you all the credits that you deserve here. Go for it.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's yes, I do a lot of stuff, and it makes it hard when we're out in public and people are like, well, you just talking to somebody new. One of the questions that comes up usually, well, what do you do for a living? And excuse me, and there is a lot, and that's by design because I love a lot. I love all the things, and I've been told many, many times over the last, well, particularly over the last 2 to 3 years since I began my own business, you gotta focus on one thing. You gotta find your niche. You gotta just do that. And I'm like, I don't want to. There's too much. There's too much in this world, and it's all cool stuff. So I want to do all of it. So what I do is but what's cool is this, though, is that I have over the last year or so really figured out how to meld a lot of those things into my business with Brian Haidt Global. Because for a long time, it was, all right, let me wake up today and figure out what hat I'm going to wear, and or even which hour, from hour to hour, what hat I'm going to wear. But with this new direction that I'm going, that I'm sure we'll get into, I'm able to bring the experience from the stunt world and the experience from my work with the Army and the academic work that I've done with my doctorate degree and with the college faculty stuff that I do. So I've been able to kind of bring it all together in a way that I haven't previously. And that's been really fun because it doesn't seem like I'm juggling as much. It's like I'm pursuing just one thing. And I really do enjoy the versatility of that thing. So a little bit about me. I mean, I'm originally from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm back here again and have been for the last 11 years, although it was by a circuitous route. I left after high school to go to college in New Jersey at Rutgers, where I did not graduate. I found stunts. I went to college because I don't know, that's what I was expected to do. That's what people did. You graduate high school, you go to college. So that's what I did, but I had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I spent the first 2 years of college trying to figure that out and didn't. And then it turned out that a friend of mine was the company manager of the Batman stunt show at the Six Flags in New Jersey. And so he got us some tickets, a friend of mine and I, and we went out to see the show, and I was floored immediately. The show started with this huge explosion and motorcycles jumping out of this thing, and I was in awe, and I sat there. The 20 minutes flew by, and because my friend was the company manager, I was able to go backstage and talk to the performers, and I asked them the question I've gotten probably 5,000 times since then: how do you get to be a stuntman? How do you get this job? what do you have to do for that? And they told me, they said, well, for this job you need to know how to do fights, high falls, falling from high places, and motorcycles. And at the point, I could do exactly zero of those things. And so I linked up with one of the performers from the show who was nice enough to teach me fights and high falls. And I bought a dirt bike and went out and started practicing. And I got good enough on it where I could at least go to the audition and not look stupid. And I got the job. I did that job the next summer. I did that show and just had so much fun. I couldn't even believe I was getting a paycheck. It was just so much fun. And after that, when I went back to Rutgers for my senior year, I couldn't focus. I couldn't pay any attention. I'd found what I wanted to do, and it involved nothing related to Rutgers and school. So I nearly failed out the first semester. I did somehow or another manage to pass that one. But when the second semester rolled around, I was truly failing everything. There was no way. So I dropped out. I dropped out of school and just kind of hung around New Jersey for a few months until the show started up again. Did the show again that summer and then moved out to LA, where they had the same show. Luckily, this was really fortunate for me. They had the same Batman show at the Six Flags in Los Angeles. So I was able to get a job working at that show when I first moved out. That's something rare for people who want to be stunt people, to be able to come out to LA, or nowadays, you know, Atlanta or New York, or a couple places you could go, but to actually have a job when you first go out in the business. So I was very fortunate to have that. And so I did the show out there, and I started to get into the film and TV world and pursuing stunts. And that's what I did for about 4 or 5 years, though. I missed learning. I wanted to grow. I wanted to learn more. So I went back to school, which wasn't easy because this is before the internet took over education. And so I had to physically go back to New Jersey to finish this degree, the one semester I missed. But I did, and it was great. And then I continued on with a master's degree in sports psychology and a PhD in organizational psychology, which is essentially performance psychology for businesses. But never with the intention of ever working in any of those fields. It didn't appeal to me to try to work in those fields. It was just interesting material. And it was incredibly applicable material for me personally as a stunt person, because the ability to maintain focus and the ability to be aware of counterproductive thinking and change it when you need to, the ability to manage and regulate emotions and energy activation levels. These are all parts of sport performance psychology, and they are incredibly helpful when you're doing stunts. So it was kind of a combination of a curiosity, a learning curiosity that I had, as well as I could see the benefits, and I really enjoyed putting those things into practice. So I did that. I went back to school. I got those things. And then, you know, life took a turn. I got married. That came with a stepdaughter. And stunts, because the entertainment industry in general is very volatile. It's uncertain. You never know when you're going to work, or where you're going to work, or for how long you're going to work, or how much money is going to come when you do work. So with a family, that scared me a little bit. So I started looking for real jobs, is what I call them, you know, a full-time job that I could count on the money. But I was looking around like, all right, well, I have a master's degree, because I didn't have the doctorate at the time, but I have a master's degree and no experience doing anything but falling down. I wonder what kind of job I can get. And it turns out you can get a job as a performance psychology consultant for the Army, if that's your resume. And that's what I did. I worked for 2 years up at Fort Lewis in Washington as a sport performance psychology consultant, working with soldiers on specific performances. So we would get brought in to work with units that maybe they wanted to increase their qualification score with the rifles, with shooting, or they wanted to get better faster with medical tasks, or clearing buildings if they were infantry, or finding IEDs if they were combat engineers, or their fire missions if they were artillery. It just depended on what their jobs were as to how we came in. But the job for us was to really, again, get people's minds right so that when they were at their task, they could learn it more quickly and they could be more consistent during the performance. And that was a really fun job. But then life took a turn again. I got divorced. So I went back to LA and started stunts again full time. Did that for another 4 or 5 years until rinse and repeat. Another wife came on the scene with another stepdaughter, and the same thought process happened. So I took a job with the Army again, this time at Fort Campbell here in the Nashville area. So that's what brought me back to Nashville again. But this time, and this was a really big deal for me. The program had expanded. So there was still the traditional sport performance psychology piece of it, like I described earlier, but there was also a resilience side of it. And although they were grounded in the same theoretical knowledge and they came from the same place within the psychology world, same concepts, same techniques, etc., the intent was different and the way that it was taught was different. And what I mean by that is the resilience training really was about, okay, so we're all walking through life and we're going to encounter adversity. Things are going to go wrong. There's nothing we can do about that. So when that happens, do we have the resources to deal with those things effectively? How well can we bounce back from and even become better as a result of having experienced those challenges? What are the tools and resources that we can leverage in those moments? That really spoke to me because, like I said, through the first divorce, and then it wasn't too long, I was at that job before I was getting divorced again. So it was a really tough time in my life, and learning, teaching, being regularly around these concepts was not only helpful for the soldiers, I believe, but also helpful for me. I really enjoyed that process. So I got kind of away from the sport performance stuff with specific performances being targeted and more to the broader, it doesn't matter whether you're at work, whether you're having a conversation with your spouse, it doesn't matter what it is. These are some things that can be helpful for you. And that really stuck with me. And I liked that. And I did that job for 9 years, never got away from stunts all the whole time. I would still do stunts. When I was called, I had some friends that would call me. I'd go do the shows, but I was at that job full time until about a little over two and a half years ago. I left. It was just time to go. It was time to grow and move on. Kind of like you and I were talking about at the beginning before we started. And I started my own business. At the time, it was Begin Again Performance Psychology. Now it's Brian Height Global. Went back to stunts again full time for the third time for those keeping count. And I wrote a book. I started doing some speaking and that's the realm that I'm still in. And it's one that I really enjoy because I'm able to bring in those experiences from stunts and the experiences with the Army and incorporate those into the talks that I do, into the workshops that I create, into eventually, I don't have any now, but the classes, courses that I offer online and the coaching that I do with whomever. I've worked with athletes, I've worked with performers, Broadway actors, singers, dancers, stunt people. I've worked with entrepreneurs, worked with real estate agents, worked with a lot of different people, all of whom the common thread was they wanted more. They felt within themselves that there was more there. There was growth possible. And they felt a little stagnant or a little stuck, or they were having some challenges in some really important moments for them, some high stakes situations. And so we worked together with that. And that's it. That's how I got to where I am sitting here talking to you.
Well, we have a whole life that we have to dissect right now with a lot of intensive stuff that we can really, you know, take to the bank here, as I stated earlier. Well, there's quite a bit in your story there, you know, for audiences, just to kind of highlight a few things. Well, one is for our young, you know, folks out there who are still trying to figure out, you know, who they are and what they want to do. I mean, that's a typical point. I mean, listen, I have a couple of teenagers myself. Well, they're just in the 18 mark. So college, you know, just about, one is going in, one is already in. And of course for those that know me, I have an older person, you know, an older child, but he's already gone in his path. But the fact is, that's always an age. And by the way, even my older one, he's still trying to figure out what he wants to do. I mean, he's only 27. So at the end of the day, you know, there is a time frame where, you know, and it's very common in the States and worldwide now, and I guess this is the new generation more than the older generation. At least I can give you an example. In my times, you know, I kind of know I wanted to go to school because there's only one path to succeed. At least that's how it was presented to us. You go to school, you get a degree, you get a job, you get, you know, a career path, and you're making money and life becomes peachy. That's kind of like the old standard, and that has been kind of shifted, you know, more now, because we have a lot of options that we might not have, you know, there. So love what you said about, listen, you got into, you know, the school, which you did the right thing, like everybody has to do. Listen, I'm for formal education. I mean, it has a place, but it's not everything, because, you know, we can learn and be enlightened, you know, beyond the regular educational standard education there. What it does, it gives you those credentials that kind of almost vet out, you know, your standing in competition, if you want to call it that way. But at the end of the day, you can still succeed without that, you know, for those people that may not believe that that's the one to go for, right? But at the end of the day, I had a professor, he always says, you know, just have a degree. You don't have to do anything with it, but just have it. You never know when you're going to need it. So, and I kind of put that always, you know, in the back, you know, burner as a salt thing. So I did myself that too. So, but what you did is that you went to school, you kind of try to figure out, you know, didn't quite make you who you were, or at least make you happy, but you discovered something that was fascinating. And by the way, I have to say, like, whenever you watch anybody that's talking, and I mean watching us today or listening, you know that when you watch movies, 99% of these things that you see with actors, they're done by a stunt double, somebody that is, throwing themselves in the line of fire or really in the fire physically, and so on and so forth. So that's real people. And so my first job actually was in Disney. So one of the things I used to do is go around, the parks and watch like Indiana Jones. There was a big, show there that they had, the stunts, and they show you how they all do it. And, it was impressive to see, and there's also Universal, they had their own, and you see all these guys jump in, you're talking about bikes and stuff. And, in the Indiana show, you had these people dropping from the sea and the roofs and, and then falling. And it's pretty impressive. Like, these guys can do this stuff. Like, I can't do it, but you got, literally excited about that. And what I love about what you said, it's not so much you liked something and you didn't know anything about it. You managed to get into it, which is will and real determination. And again, for our, folks out there, it doesn't matter what age you are. If you like something, you want it so bad, you're going to do whatever it takes to make it happen. And that's something to take to the bank again, as a rule. And you did that. Not only that, you did it successfully and you did whatever it took to make it happen. You went, you asked, you learned, you got what the tools and you got good at it and got better at it over time. And you made the living out of it. And that's the thing. People, if you have an idea, if you want something bad, you can do it. And that's the thing. Nobody can stop us. And that's actually something that's important, just I wanted to extract from your discussion there. Now, the other thing is you went back and you kind of figured, you need more and you went to school and finished, whatever you needed. You even progressed. That's the other thing. Like, we don't know. Like, today we have one idea. A couple of years later, that idea changes. And I think, listen, I'm... I've been around long enough to have changed my mind many times over and things restarted over and reboot and shift here, left, go right. And life is not a linear thing, by the way. Anyone that's watching, especially if you're still trying to figure out things out, at any given moment, things can change. Left, right, whatever. There's things that can happen worldwide. There's things that can happen in your family environment, like, when you mentioned about divorce and stuff. All these things can't actually happen, and we just have to shift. And the idea is how to shift with it. It's like you got to go with the current. And you actually depicted that picture perfectly for our audiences, because it's not a perfect, life. For people that may think, I'm going to have the exact perfect life. I'm going to, put it in a line and just, have every dot and stuff. Now, of course, you can work towards those dots, but know that you're going to go down, zigzag up, zigzag down, and you're going to keep getting those momentums. But that's really how it is. And again, I think everybody who's been around long enough, they will probably can really vet out that, this is the truth of reality that we live in. It's, you can hit those markers, but you're going to have some deviations and you can come back to those markers, and that's part of it. And so thank you for sharing that. The other thing is, I love what you said about you learn some sports, stuff that is great and it can apply in real life, and you've used it in your work. And you've used it again. I it's funny because when you mentioned something about the Army, I didn't know, I read the stuff about you, but I didn't know what kind of work you did. And specifically what you said is amazing. I mean, just nobody thinks about those things that you've actually trained, the Army on. The idea, like, you can get people to do better and be more focused on things. And, and then, like, now the second, run, the resilience component, these are things. And by the way, those are not just for the Army. As you said, it could be in corporate, it could be for executives, entrepreneurs, anybody. And you do that. You coach different people from different, different industries and lifestyles and so on and so forth. So it changes dynamics, but the rules are the same for all of us. So I wanted just to highlight these points, because I think there's a lot of there. And again, for audiences, this is the thing. We can learn and get motivated and inspired by these stories and these types of experiences from, people who have done this, because sometimes we try to figure out and we start doubting ourselves, right? Like, I don't know how to do this. Well, we're going to do it. But when you hear this, like, I'm hearing you, Ryan Bryan, I'm like, it validates the stuff I've gone through. It validates a lot of stuff that I know. And I know some people are like, oh, wow, it is true. And here's the thing. Even if you don't know, you have resources. Again, Brian is a resource, and we can go to him and people like him to actually get some guidance and stuff. And through even the shows, we can get some of that enlightenment. So thank you for that. Now, you mentioned keywords, organizational stuff. You mentioned performance, resilience. And, we talked, I initiated with pressure. So let's talk about those things. Those are huge components of life. I mean, and pressure is the biggest one. I think everybody's under pressure at a point in their life. especially when you're making decisions, especially when you have situations in life that you have to deal with. Now you kind of focus on that. That's your core. Let's spend some time on just dealing with pressure. I mean, you know, we hear peer pressure as a standard word that's being thrown left and right. There's pressure at work, there's pressure in everything, right? So let's talk about that. What does that mean, you know, in real words? And how do you deal with people who really are struggling with that?
Yeah, well, you said a lot of stuff too. It's interesting that you said the Indiana Jones show is where is what you watched, because when I was, this was 1994, 95, maybe, I don't remember, but I was skipping college and I went to play golf and I ended up behind three guys. And, you know, when you play golf, they usually send out people in foursomes. So there were three of them. There was one of me. I said, hey, do you guys mind if I play with you? They said, no, it's no problem. So I went out and it turns out one of the guys was wearing a Stunts Unlimited shirt, which is a group of stunt people. And I asked him about it because I had just done this was after I had done the stunt show 1 year. And so we started talking a little bit and I said, yeah, I'm planning to move down to Florida to audition for the Indiana Jones show. Cause I could do some gymnastic stuff and there was gymnastics things. Like that was totally my plan to go to Florida and go do that show. And he said, no, don't do that. He said, if you want to be a stuntman, move to LA. And I said, all right. So he gave me his number and that's what I did. And so I was very close to being down there with you, but I know a lot of guys who came out of those Universal shows and the Disney shows too. But yeah, it's just interesting that the overlap and that you meet with people sometimes, but the pressure, yeah, pressure's, it's something. Here's the thing. I just, because of my nature, I tend to be a contrarian in a lot of ways. I tend to challenge the assumptions and status quo. For example, I was a Dallas Cowboys fan for a long time. I don't really watch football much anymore just because we got rid of cable and it's hard now. But I'll still watch it every now and then. And if I do, then I'll root for the Cowboys. But the reason that I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, and this tells you a lot about me, is because my mom was a Washington Redskins fan. And if you know anything about football, you know that those are rivals. And the Washington Redskins hate the Cowboys. Well, the Commanders now, and the Cowboys hated the Redskins. And so my mom was rooting for the one team, so I decided to root for the other team. I had no other reason to do that, but that's what I did. And so that's kind of the way that I approach life. If somebody's doing one thing, I look at it from a very different angle. I try to dissect what is a common assumption or just a given in a lot of people's minds and really ask the question, huh, does that really make sense? Are there other ways to look at it? And pressure came up recently in that vein because I don't remember where I was working on something, but somebody said something. And just at that point in my life, at that point in time, it stuck out at me. And they said something about, you got to be able to perform well in pressure situations. And I don't know why the light bulb went off and the red flag went up, but it did. And I started thinking, I was like, is there even such a thing as a pressure situation? And as I thought more about it, I thought, I don't think there is. I don't think there is a pressure situation. And I'll give you an example. So it was about 20, 25 years ago. I was working on a TV show called VIP. It was Pamela Anderson was the star of the show. And I was in the back of a U-Haul truck. Here was the stunt. I was driving in the back of a U-Haul truck. There was a fight happening, but we didn't see it. It was happening inside the truck. And as the truck's driving down the road, I come flying out the back of the truck like I'd been thrown, hit the ground and roll. Now, before that stunt, I was feeling an incredible amount of pressure. There was a lot of pressure before I got into the truck, while I was standing in the truck waiting for him to call action, and while it was driving up until the point when I'm supposed to come out of it. There was a lot of pressure that I was experiencing. I remember it vividly. Cut to about a month ago, I was working on a TV show called The Righteous Gemstones. I'm in the back of a truck, this time it's an SUV, driving down the road at about 15 miles an hour. It's supposed to hit a bump. The back of the SUV pops up. I come flying out the back of it, hit the ground and roll. So almost identical situations. But in that second one, I experienced no pressure. I felt none. I didn't feel any before I got into the truck, didn't feel any before the truck started moving. And I didn't feel any as we were approaching that spot where the bump was. There was no pressure. And so that begs the question, well, why? If there are pressure situations, if there's such a thing as a pressure situation, I would think that would be one of them, right? You know, I mean, there were a bunch of people watching and both times. I mean, 50 to 100 people all staring at me. It was all about me. That was the one thing that everybody was paying attention to. That would seem like that would qualify as a pressure situation. And it did in one circumstance, but it didn't in the other. So why? What was the difference? Well, in the first circumstance, there were, like I said, a lot of people watching, and some of those people were incredibly, important. They were important, and they still are in the stunt business, just very high up people who coordinated, so who were stunt coordinators on some really big shows. The guy driving the truck, for example, was Andy Gill. He's coordinated the Fast and the Furious movies. I mean, it's some of these guys that have worked on the biggest shows. Henry Kinji was out there. Henry Kinji jumped a car out of building in Lethal Weapon 4. I mean, some of these guys, just some of the best in the business. And they were all standing by the camera off to the side watching me get ready to do this thing. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, man, I can't screw this up. Also, the stunt coordinator is a good friend of mine, and they're watching him too. And I wanted to make him look good. I wanted to you know, so that he looked good in their eyes. It mattered to me what his image was. So this stuff was what was going through my head. I don't want to screw this up. I don't want these guys to think I'm bad. I don't want my career to get tarnished or damaged because I messed this up some kind of way. And I definitely don't want to make this coordinator look bad either. And the flip side was going through my mind as well. It was, well, you know what? If I hit this thing right, my ticket's punched. These guys are going to bring me on to these big shows. I'm going to make a lot of money. Everything's going to be great. Jeff's going to, you know, the coordinator, stunt coordinator on the show, he's going to hire me on all the other things that he does. So that side was happening too. And there was a ton of pressure. And that the reason was because of where my mind was. It was because where the focus was, which was on the consequences. It was the outcome. I want, if I screw it up, if I do it well, that's the outcome. The consequences, if I do it badly, then. If I do it well, then. And whatever follows that then, those are the consequences. Couple things to remember. One is, all of that was just made up by me. It's all in the future. It was all my imagination. It was all created inside my own brain. None of it was real. Although, however realistic or probabilistic it might be, it wasn't real at that moment. What was real is that I was sitting in the back of that truck and I was getting ready to come out the back of it. And there was a way to do that and be able to do it safely and do it well to achieve the outcome that I wanted. Now, cut to the Righteous Gemstones, where I didn't feel any pressure. Well, why? I had Danny McBride, one of the comedy TV geniuses that's out there who writes and directs. He's sitting there staring at me. I've got this stunt coordinator who, again, I want to make him look good. And if I do, maybe I get on some other shows later on. So it's the same situation. But in that case, I was focused only on what I needed to do. I had my hands were tied together with rope. So I had to kind of get in this weird position to pop the latch when the bump hit so that I could come out. And when I came out, again, my hands are tied. So there was no, I had to figure out how to land with that going on. And that's where my mind was figuring out and ensuring that I was doing all of the things that I needed to do in those moments to make success more likely, to enhance, maximize the likelihood that I will achieve the outcome that I want to achieve. I wasn't paying any attention at all to consequences or the future ramifications of what was going on. I was just simply in the moment. And that's the thing, is because pressure exists in the mind, not in the moment. It doesn't exist in the situation itself. Situations do not determine whether we experience pressure. We determine whether we experience pressure based on where our attention is, what we're choosing to focus on, the meaning that we choose to assign to it, how we're perceiving these circumstances. All of that is what's going to determine whether we experience pressure. And that's true across the board. It doesn't matter if you have an upcoming challenging conversation with your spouse, or if you're getting ready to discipline your kid and you're a little bit, you know, I don't know, you feel pressure around, well, I should do this or I shouldn't, or whatever the pressure is coming from. Or if it's at your work, you know, where there's some sort of assignment or presentation or thing that's coming up, and for whatever reason, you're experiencing that pressure. If you are experiencing pressure, again, I mentioned it earlier, to think about it as an indicator, as a red flag. that probably your attention is in the wrong spot. And the things that you're prioritizing are not the things you should be prioritizing in order to create the likelihood of success. Because, and here's a good example of this. Like you mentioned earlier, life is not linear. It's all over the place. Well, an example that I use for that is soccer. An example I use for pressure is soccer too. So, because in soccer with the linear, it's not like football where if you run a football play and the ball is not further forward than it was before, then it's bad. Soccer is not like that. You go backwards, you go forward. Sometimes you go backwards to go forwards. That's just the way that it goes. And pressures, it's the same thing. So if I ask somebody, what are you trying to achieve in soccer? What are you trying to do? Well, we want to win the tournament. Okay, great. You want to win the tournament. Well, how are you going to do that? Well, we got to win the games. Yes, you do. That's a wonderful answer. So how are you going to do that? Well, we need to score more goals than the other teams do. Yes, that's how you win for sure. How are you going to do that? Well, we have to dribble well and we have to pass well and we have to be aggressive on defense and pick ourselves up after mistakes and get back in the game quickly and keep a good attitude and stay focused. Yes, 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 yes. That is exactly what you need to do. Those things, because those are things that right now in this moment you can control and you can do that are required to achieve the outcome that you want. Focusing on the outcome itself, scoring a goal, does no good. Focusing on what's necessary to score that goal, that's absolutely where attention is most productive. So when we're experiencing pressure, our attention's in the wrong spot. It's on the outcome, or even further than that, the consequence of that outcome. That does us no good. It helps us not even a little bit, except if we are doing some contingency planning. Now, if we're ahead of time, something's coming up and we're trying to figure out, okay, what might go wrong that would screw all this up for me? That's when we can imagine the future and think, okay, well, if this happens, then I will. But that then I will, that's the difference. When we're experiencing pressure, we're not thinking about then I will. We're just stopping on if this happens, then. So that's where pressure is. So if you're experiencing pressure in any aspect of your life over anything at all, just check in with yourself. Develop the awareness to recognize, number one, that the pressure is there, and number two, where your mind is, because chances are you're in the future. You're living in your imagination. And again, as probabilistic as it might be, what it is that you're creating in your mind, it might be a likely outcome. It might be a likely consequence of the outcome, but it hasn't happened yet. What's going to determine what does happen in the future is what you do right now. The present determines the future. So where does your attention need to be if the future matters to you? In the present, where you can actually affect the future. So that's kind of my take on pressure. Again, I don't believe that there are such things as pressure situations. I don't believe that pressure is inevitable under any circumstances. I don't believe we have to experience it. And I don't believe that it's helpful to experience it, which is some pushback that I get. I hear from people sometimes, all right, Brian, well, I hear you, except that for me, I do better under pressure. When I have pressure, then it focuses me. I get the energy that I need and I tend to do better. So I like the pressure. And what I would say to that is just simply, well, I don't think it's the pressure that you're talking about. You're excited about what you're doing. What you're doing matters to you. It's important. What I heard was motivation. So you're highly motivated to do what it is because it's important. It matters. You see the value in it. And so you're going to approach it. That's one. The second thing that I heard is that motivation, that caring, that value, that importance is generating an energy inside you. And you're absolutely right that there is an ideal amount of energy activation for us to perform well at any given task. There is. Right now, this podcast, for you and I to do well, there's an ideal amount of energy activation that we need. If it's too low, we're going to be stumbling over words. We're going to be monotone. It's going to be very boring. If it's too high, well, then we're going to speak very rapidly and we can't understand the other person and we can't like think straight and all the things. So there's an ideal amount of energy activation no matter what performance we're talking about. And so when somebody comes at me with, yeah, I need the pressure, it's not the pressure. It's the motivation you're experiencing from the fact that it matters and that energy boost that we get from that perception. And it is a perception. I'm in a situation, it matters to me. As a result, my physiology bumps up. that connection between the mind and the body is, again, it's inevitable. It happens automatically. That's what I hear. So it's not the pressure. It's the motivation and energy activation levels. So that's a lot. That's pressure, but that's my take on it.
Well, there's a lot of that. I want to just dissect a little bit there because, you know, it's funny. You did mention you had a PhD in psychology, right? This is where it is. So the proof is in the pudding, as they say, right? You know, that work that you've done, you know, it's all, see, whatever we do in life, it adds up to who you are and how you see the world. And frankly, I mean, you just literally match exactly what that whole education about, you know, the psyche and how it works and stuff. Because that's really what you kind of almost depicted here in how to handle pressure. I mean, if you were to go to a psychologist or psychiatrist, you know, they got to break it down to this whole thing, like living in the moment. It's not, because here's the thing, fears create, you know, anticipation, then anxiety. And that's where you start living in the space of the future that hasn't even happened. It's really the moment that you live in. And, you know, as you stated, when someone argues about, oh, no, I love that to work under pressure. I mean, we hear this all the time. Gems and diamonds are made under pressure, right? It's true, but it's false. I mean, it's not like they choose to, you know, made, you know, the pressure just happens to be there. And that's how the physical process of diamonds, right? But the fact is, you're right. You know, anyone who performs, by the way, everybody performs. That's the other thing. So we live a life, you're going to perform. Whether you like it or not, you know, the fact that you go to work, you're performing. The fact that you have a family, you're performing. The fact that you have friends, you're performing. Every time you interact, you know, with anything around you, you're performing to a degree. It's how you show up to the performance. And you're right. When we start thinking about everything around us, I can relate to what you just said, because I have been in sales. I've done presentations. I've done public talks. I was a tour guide. So every time you want to be, even in the shows, I mean, when you're doing this, as you said, there is, you have to be present. You have to be focused and stuff. There's a level of energy that you have to maintain. And yes, you know, it takes a little bit of practice and you become good at it. But the minute you start thinking about what can go wrong and, you know, what the outcomes and stuff, that's when you lose it, because your mind is literally distracted from where you're supposed to be. As a matter of fact, this is true for me. Like when I do any presentation, I don't like to think about it. I don't like to prepare for it. I don't like to stuff. I know, you just tell me, like, you know, you're going to show up on this day. You're going to present. I know my stuff. I get up and do it. If I start thinking about it 5 minutes before, I am not in a good place. I go in and I'm like thinking, and I'm now start thinking about what people are looking at me, how they're looking at me, what they're thinking about, you know, why is this guy looking? Why is, you know, you got to throw that stuff. Like literally, like, I don't want to think about it. I just get up. I do my thing. I show up. I perform. I speak. I make it happen. And I walk away. Cause that's really, you know, because the minute you start preparing your mind that, you know, all the stuff that may, and you got to prepare, like, you know, how to handle this and stuff, you're actually over, you know, literally doing it for yourself. At least that's my person. So again, I'm just relating to what you said. And I love what the example you said, same exact scenario, one time, you know, same drop, same pretty much, you know, almost that scene is repeating itself. One is you're the most casual, relaxed person because you're living the moment. You just focused on the task at hand. The other one, you're focused about everything that is irrelevant at that point to you, because no matter what would have happened, you still have to jump out of the truck and you still have to do exactly that. And so all the other stuff they were thinking about doesn't matter. Whatever happened would have happened exactly the way it happened. Probably worse, because now that you're distracted, you might have made the wrong move and fell the wrong way. And now everything you've dreaded is going to become reality. And by the way, it manifests that way. The more we think bad about, like, what can go wrong, that's what's going to happen. The more you think that, you know, you don't think about it, just live in the moment, get the best you can do at that point. And that's exactly right. You focus on one thing, like laser focus. I'm doing this. Nothing else matters. You don't care. You don't see anybody else. You don't care. Those people don't even exist when you actually understand, you know, all that exists is that you, the latch, the trunk, and the floor that you're going to hit. If you actually thought about that, you don't even see. And that's actually in acting. A lot of, you know, performers, they basically blank out everything. They're in the zone. They're in the role. They don't even see the cameras. They don't see anybody. They're really living the moment. And I think that's actually a key, you know, I guess, differentiator in high performing, you know, roles, role play, right? You're really in the zone. You don't know anybody. You don't see anybody. Yeah, you know, they're all there, but they're like basically blanked out. They're zero. There's nothing there except you and whoever is in front of you that you're talking to, or whatever action you're going to do. And that, again, whether you're in business, you're in folks, in meetings too, people get nervous. In interviews, people get nervous because you're thinking about, why if I don't get the job? Don't worry about if you don't get the job. You're going there to do the best thing that you can, present the best, portfolio of yours and presentation that you can ever have. And the rest is history. You know, if you do it right, the outcomes are going to be correct. And that's it. But here's the other thing. The other thing, I think sometimes we need to be prepared. Like, well, what's the worst that can happen? I'm not going to get the job. Okay, cool. So you get that out of the way. So if you actually kind of like know, like you remove all those potential obstacles out of the way and the objections, you're actually not looking at those things anymore. No more anxiety. And that's the thing. Most of us live in the fear of the future, which hasn't happened. We're still in today. Nothing happened tomorrow yet, at least not in our knowledge, right? So why would I have to dwell? I mean, like they say, anxiety is thinking about the future, and pressure or stress is thinking about the past. you keep living in the past, you're stressed. You keep living, in the future, your anxiety, you're anticipating like, what could I go? And that's not good. So I love what you said about the focus is really the moment. It's not happening. And your little argument about the concept when someone says, I do better under pressure, it's more how we define it. Maybe we think it's pressure. It's not really pressure. As you said, you're motivated by that, And some people say, by the way, that's a very common question in interviews. How do you work under pressure? Yeah. Oh, yeah. How do you handle yourself if there's, if multi... It's, by the way, you did allude to something.
How great would it be if somebody asked that question? How do you perform under pressure? You're like, I don't. I have the ability to perform without creating pressure for myself. That's how I do it. That would be a great answer.
Well, I'll tell you, if you ask that question, I mean, if someone asks you the question and you respond exactly, they'd be like, huh? Because they're not prepared. They won't be prepared for that answer.
Yeah.
Because they expect you to give them a whole spiel about, how and so and what kind of pressure, and then give an example of instances where you had to deal with that. And you're right. There is no pressure. I do the job. I'm cool. I know what I'm going to do. Doesn't matter what you throw at me. It doesn't faze me. And that's really what it is. Nothing should faze you, in the world that you do. So once you're into something and this is what you love to do, it doesn't matter what. And by the way, you actually live in that life. And I can tell you from what you already described to us as what you do. And I think a moment there you said, I do a lot of things. And that's what makes me, really excited about it. Well, guess what? That's exactly what it is. Like, when you are who you are, you can do multiple things, multitask, different projects, and so on and so forth. If you look at it and I'm like just do one thing at a time, you're doing the things you love. You don't even think about like all the big picture about it. You just focus at it as you do it. You don't even think about it. Like people say, well, how do you do a lot of these things? Well, to me, they're not a lot of things. They're all one, and it's all done at a certain time. And every single moment of things that I do and every piece of the work I do is just focused at the time. Like right now, I'm with you on this. Nothing matters. I'm not worried about what the world, what's happening in the world. I don't care. This is just Brian and I having a discussion, and we focus on this. And literally, if, audiences are behind me, I'm not even seeing them. I'm just looking at you. And that's really what happened. Like, and by the way, if you do, live podcasts or live shows and you have people sitting, you don't see the people. You really don't. I mean, you're really in stuff. Now, the minute you start thinking about the people, you get distracted. And that's really, I think.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, for me, when I'm on set and when I've done live shows, a lot of times I am looking at the camera and I am looking at the people. It's because those are relevant. For example, if I'm doing a fight scene on a film, I need to know that where my body is in relation to the camera and where I throw that punch is going to be one that sells as a punch. So if I'm in the wrong spot and I'm throwing this punch in a certain way, it's going to be a miss and we're going to end up having to do it again. And it's kind of the same thing with live shows, even more than that, because depending on the type of show, you got to read the audience and see, all right, are they kind of bored? Are they not bored? Like, do I need to jazz things up or, get somebody's attention? Or if I'm giving a talk or doing a class or something, I got to watch the people because if somebody's yawning or somebody's checking out, that will define where I stand in the room a lot of times. I'll shift from the right side to the left side, go get in front of them. Or if there's talking going on, I'll walk right over to them. I won't look at them. I won't make a thing out of it, but I walk right next to them. And, oh, okay, I get it. So you have to be aware of what's, I guess my point is this, whatever is relevant, whatever matters in the environment, that's what we're paying attention to. In other words, we are, I don't like to say blocking out, because that's like an active negative thing. Like I'm going to block out or I'm going to not think about it. I don't like thinking about that way. It's like goal setting. I want to talk about what I'm going to do, not what I'm not going to do. So I don't like thinking about it as blocking out because that happens naturally. If I'm focused on you, then by definition, I am blocking out the irrelevant stimuli in my environment. So I think about it in terms of, what am I going to do? Where is my attention going to go? How am I going to think? What am I going to focus on? And then by definition, the irrelevant goes away.
Oh, wait, so right, by the way, you're right. As a matter of fact, well, I was given the example of like this kind of show, right? But in right, when you present, because I've done trainings and presentations, that's different, because in a way, you want to get, as you said, engage the audience. You also, like, mm-hmm. there's a technique for that. Like, you focus, you can, there's always two people that always smiling, looking at you, happy, and they're following you. Maybe those are the ones you focus on. As you said, someone that is giving you bad signals, you might be able to get their attention to get them back into this. So there's different ways to address different situations. But at the end, the whole point that I was making is more about focus on whoever, whatever you're doing at this time. It depends on the situation. Yes, you have to adjust. I mean, adaptability is another piece that we need to be good at, to be able to gauge. But you're right. You know that you're in front of the camera. You know that the angle matters for the camera and the audience. So that's different. You are you. But again, in itself, you still focus on what matters most at the time. You see, so you're doing it based on your circumstances and the environment you're in. So again, what I said there is more about, this is my technique for this particular, you know, set that I have. But if I am in a different situation, you have to adhere to whatever that, you know, requirements for that, and still be focused on what matters the most. And if that audience is you, what matters, then you're right. You got to do what you have to do, and you have to gauge. And by the way, like you said, it's not so much about what's going on. It's about you at all times. It's about how you are setting yourself in that position to live in the moment, to live in the focus. And as you said, there is no pressure at that point. It's like, and by the way, it's like when you're above of the water, like I cruise a lot, right? So if you're on the ship, you know, the waves are up there. Once you get under the actual ocean, there is no more waves. For the most part, it's pretty cool. Once you get into a certain layer, it's just water, you know, and you basically just live the moment in there. Now, I used to, you know, scuba dive and things like that. And I, you know, I've done a lot of things, you know, in the water. I mean, I love the ocean. And frankly, when it's serene, there's nothing. You're just in the moment. You know, you don't worry about everything else that's going on. And that's the thing. This is not the ostrich effect where you just put your head down and everything else is happening, thinking that it's not going to happen. This is you in control. What you're saying is being in control at all times. Your breathing, your focus, your senses, everything is in the moment. Nothing else matters. Nothing is distracting. I think that's really fear and distraction happens, as you said, is thinking about all the consequences of your actions. And then you live in a space that is not, there's multiple, you know, outcomes that can happen. And that's the thing. You don't know any of that, but you do know one thing. If you don't do it right, it's going to be the wrong outcome. So you got to do it right, period, because that's what you want. That's what you do. So thank you for that. Now the work you do is with different people, right? Different, you know, groups and stuff. Now you mentioned, you know, trainings, you mentioned coaching, you mentioned, you know, classes. Do you have any classes that are lined up already that you're working on right now? And also you mentioned something about a book that you wrote some stuff. Let's talk about those things.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to jump into that in just a second. There were two things that you said I really want to highlight. And one is the fact that it is that I don't want people to think that I'm downplaying the consequences, or by saying like keep your attention in the moment, that we're trying to gloss over treat the consequences like they don't matter. So I think when people talk about I'm good in pressure situations, again, I think what they mean is I'm great when the stakes are high, because it's a challenge for me, when the consequences really do matter. And sometimes they do. I mean, truly, I've been in situations where it's not even exaggeration to say that if I or somebody else does something wrong, one or more of us might not go home. That's a very real situation for it has been in my life, and it has been for a lot of other people. So there are times when the consequences truly are really, really important, and it still doesn't matter, because in order for us to do our best, which we can't do better than, we can only do our best, in order for us to do our best, we have to focus on those things that allow our best to occur and allow the consequences to manifest. Like you mentioned, control. There's only so much I can control. If the outcome of my thing, let's say I want to win a soccer game, if the outcome that I want depends on you, well, again, I can only control what I can control. I can dribble, I can pass, I can take care of my attitude, my mindset, my focus, but I can't do anything about you. So there is a limited amount of control that we have in any situation. So one of the big tricks is to figure out what we actually can control in that environment and really focus our attention heavily on that. And then the other thing I just wanted to point out, again, because we're talking about stunts, we're talking about performances and all these things, all of this is relevant in just daily life. I mentioned conversations with spouses, but we have Thanksgiving coming up when we're recording this. I don't know when it's going to be released, but we're recording this about a week before Thanksgiving. And that for a lot of people is a time when they experience a lot of pressure. I have 20 family members descending on my house, all expecting to eat this huge pile of food that I'm supposed to cook and somehow have all hot at the same time while the dinner, like there's this pressure that comes from that situation. And it's just, that's what they experience. Why? It's break it down the same way. I want this to go well. I want the people to think that to have a good time, to think that the food is good. I don't want them to think badly about me. I don't want them to judge me negatively. If you're experiencing pressure, probably that's where the mindset is, as opposed to, okay, today is Saturday. What can I do Saturday to prepare for Thursday? Well, maybe I can go to the store and I can buy some of those things that you know, that'll still be good, etc. So there are, maybe if I need to rent tables or chairs because I don't have enough of those, or I can figure out how to configure the house so I don't have to do that last minute. Or if there are some babies coming over that aren't normally here, I can baby-proof the house. Whatever it is, what I can do it right now. I can take steps right now to help create conditions for that success. And it doesn't have to be on a stadium level, whatever, on a TV show or anything else. This truly is something that we experience daily. And if we can let that pressure be a red flag that we're probably not paying attention to the present moment, I think we're going to benefit. So as far as the programs and the offerings that I have, one of them is this. It's called Pressure X. It's a 5-6 weeks coaching program that we go through identifying what, you know, the situation is that you're having challenges with, how you're currently perceiving it, how you might perceive it, and some ways forward in terms of keeping and sustaining attention how you need it to be in order to be at your best. I also have programs around motivation, what it is, how we, you know, where levels of motivation, how those are determined, sources of motivation, why those are important to consider, and how to create conditions in our lives for not only our own motivation, but those we lead as well. And by lead, I mean, maybe it's just kids, maybe it's family members, maybe it's friends that are peer group. It doesn't have to be a formal leadership position. It can be anything. And then I also have a program around a 4-phased approach to peak performance that delves into the before, the right before, the during, and the after of any given performance. And any performance has those 4 phases. And if we understand those 4 phases, when they begin and end, and the things we need to do within them to create conditions for success, we're way better off. We tend to be way less overwhelmed and can perform much more consistently. So those are 3 programs that I have. I do them through coaching programs. I'm in the process of developing some classes, some online courses for them, but they're not there yet. I also do keynote speaking around those concepts too. So if anything that I've said today resonates with you, or if those topics seem like they resonate, check it out online, brianheightglobal.com, and reach out to me. We'll do a little discovery call. Let me know, you know, what group it is that you think might benefit from a talk, from a discussion, from a workshop, and I'm happy to work all that out. I do have a book that's out. It's called Begin Again, Utilize the Wisdom of Eastern and Western Ideologies to Achieve Your Full Potential. It's just a book that came out of my own personal work. I told you I got divorced twice. When the second divorce happened, I was really in a bad place. And one of the things that I did, to just one of the coping mechanisms that I used, was I read a lot. I read a lot of wisdom works. I read Marcus Aurelius's Meditations and a lot of stuff from Seneca. And I read the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads. I read the Bible. I read just other works that were just some wisdom works that I could hopefully glean some goodness from. And I did. And whenever I did, and I saw the applicability of what I was reading, I wrote it down on a little sticky note. And then those turned into short essays. And 183 of those later, there's a book. And that's what the book is. So it's really just a snapshot of my journey through some of the challenges that I faced. It doesn't detail challenges that I faced along the way. It really is just, again, insights that I had while I was reading these books. And I'm working on another book now. It's called Flow Under Fire, and that'll be a stuntman's guide to pressure. So working on that, not sure when that'll come out, but I have that as well. So that's it. That's me.
You're busy, man. Well, a couple of things, you know, thank you for sharing all that. And you know what? Listen, your work is definitely needed in at least talking about corporate world, for example, and especially I do sales. So sales is always pressure.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a known fact. And again, it is pressure because of how we approach it, but really your work can mitigate some of that, and people can be a lot at ease to present, to know what to do. Not, they know what the outcomes, they need the numbers, they need the goals, they need all the stuff. But if you know how to take the situation accordingly and you do the four steps and all this stuff, can change all this. So your work can be ideal for anyone. So if you're a leader out there, you're leading a you know, sales group, a team, this could be it. Also leadership, you know, I'm talking about, you know, C-suite level and you know, leadership of companies. This is something that sometimes can be very difficult because you have, you know, the perception of pressure from your board, from this, from that, and you know, the P&Ls and, you know, all the stuff that someone at a CEO level or C-suite level will have to experience. This can be something that can literally help, you know, navigate, you know, the difficulties. And by the way, I love you said something that's very important. You're right. You know, your work, you know, depends on what you do, folks. If you're watching or listening right now, it doesn't matter what you do. But in your case, for example, Brian, you do some stuff that can lead to that. I mean, you're right. These stunts can be, I mean, there's multiple things moving. There's sometimes there's fire, you know, there's all kind of stuff that's going on. A wrong move. And we've seen, you know, tragedies that happen in the stunt world, for example, you know, for the years, there's always a high risk, right? And so every single thing that you do, every decision you make, if you're not really 100% there, it can cause harm to you or somebody else. And that's a big deal. And that actually applies to real life, as you said. Everything we do impacts everybody else around us. So the minute we lose our focus and get all caught up in those unnecessary, I guess, feelings, we might be able to have outcomes that are not ideal and so on and so forth. So you're right. You know, being there, doing the stuff, and understand that you are responsible for the next step is important to be aware of it. So the awareness needs to be there. But at the moment, your action is going to determine that the outcomes are better. So if you do it right, and that's so it takes a lot of balance, really. You have to really know what you're doing. And I think that's really what makes a difference. You know that you have to focus. You only got to do one thing at a time. You got to do this right. And then the rest of it is history. You don't have to even worry about bad things happening because you know if you did your part. And I love the example, as you said, the soccer. And by the way, that's a great example. By the way, not just soccer, all sports, for example, coaches, trainers, they train, coach for months and stuff and prepare the team. But once the team is on that play, you know, they're not playing for them. They cannot be in their, you know, shoes and running the balls or like, you know, throwing, you know, the passes, whatever. Well, they can give them, you know, instructions, but the guys are still playing, you know, that the game. The people on that field are playing the game. And at that day, it's really whatever their best at that time is going to be, you know, as a team making it happen. And so you're right. So there's only so much we can control. So that also another comment on the control concept that you said. So you hit it right on the money, all these angles. And by the way, all the stuff that we're discussing here applies to everyone watching, listening. It doesn't matter what you do, where you are, it will apply. So Brian, thank you so much for sharing those nuggets and this stuff. And by the way, some people's like, well, I kind of know this stuff. You know, knowing things and getting reminded of things is one thing. I mean, sometimes we kind of know a little bit of things, but sometimes hearing things from experts and people who actually do this for a living and be able to control these things much better, understand how to give us the right steps to work on, you know, ourselves and how we can operate in this world, that's usually a good thing. And that's what we have these shows for, is just to help people kind of, you know, navigate some of the things sometimes. Because if we do things over and over, we get lost. I think that's also another problem with all humans. We just get, you know, so smooth about things. We don't even think about it. And it becomes habits, and those habits can be bad habits. And so by getting refocused in a way, or at least getting an acknowledgement that, hey, maybe we're doing it wrong. Maybe there's another way to do it. And I love what you said about you being contradictory to a degree and always like, you know, no, I'm going to look at this angle. That's another check, you know, point that sometimes we all have to have that trick, you know, in our sleeves, because I think it's a good thing to check the status quo every now and then and say like, well, why not? And that creates the opportunity to discover more and deep dive better and maybe get a better way of doing things. So thank you. So Brian, where can people actually reach out to you? What's the link?
Well, like I said, Brian Hyatt Global, BRIAN HITE global.com. That's my website. On there, you can send me a message. You can sign up for the newsletter, which you'll get some free stuff. If you do that, you'll get discount off of the programs. You'll get a free digital copy of a book. And then you can just email me directly too. It's Brian@BrianHeightGlobal.com. So reach out however you want to. I'm always happy to talk. You can schedule a discovery call if there's something you think I can do for you. But definitely reach out if any of this resonated with you. And thank you again so much for having me on. I always love these discussions, and it's just so fun. This is playtime for me. I really like it.
Well, I can tell you enjoy this, and I enjoy it too. So we're both having a good time right now. Well, so before we close, I know we're just about the hour here. Can you just leave our audiences with some final words of wisdom that they can take to the bank?
You know, one thing came to mind as you were talking at the beginning, and it involves opportunity. And this is something that I've thought a lot about over the course of my life. I think that opportunities come often. I don't know that they come all the time, that it's, you know, every single day, but they do come often. I think, though, a lot of times we don't recognize them. We don't recognize them when they come, or we don't really see them for what they are, or have the courage to pursue them. So when I think about opportunities, I think about them this way. I think that opportunities, we have to be open, we have to be flexible, and we have to be courageous if we're going to recognize and take advantage of those. And what I mean by that is we have to be open to the possibility that what we're doing right now, we may need to be doing something different, that there's other stuff out there, that we're going to encounter a new person or get new information or experience some new thing that may shift us another way. And being open to that possibility, I think, is critical. And then once we are open to it, and maybe we recognize the fact that this is happening, we have to be flexible enough, not rigid in our pursuit of a goal or a commitment that we've made. We have to be flexible enough to realize, yes, that goal was important a week ago, a month ago, 6 months ago, 5 years ago when I set it, but conditions are different now. I set the goal and then I continued to live and I experienced more things and I met more people and I've learned new stuff. And now I believe that this other direction is probably best for me. So avoiding rigidity and being flexible. And then the last thing's courage. So once we're open and we recognize the opportunity, we're flexible enough to realize that this is the direction I probably should go, then we have to have the courage to pursue it. We have to have the courage to go after this new thing, even though we might fail, even though it may not work out the way we want. And I think that that's where a lot of people tend to get stuck. They're comfortable the direction that they're going. They're comfortable in the environments in which they operate day to day. And that courage to come out of that comfort zone is something that can be lacking. It's a hard thing to do, but that's how opportunities are realized. It's not that they don't come very often. It's not that they're rare. It's that we need all three of those things to happen, to align, in order to take advantage of opportunities fully.
Right. Thank you. I'm smirking here because what you said is powerful. And, you know, you're right. I've heard this before. Oh, you know, you may not get a second opportunity or second chance. You're right. Chances are around us all the time. And sometimes we don't even see what they are. Sometimes we deny them, not, you know, going through them and see like what's there to offer. Right. And really, I think that's what you're saying here, is that opportunities are going to come, discover them, see what's their worth. You might pursue them. You might not be, but don't be, as you said, rigid, because rigid breaks, you know, malleable doesn't, right? So you have to be adaptable, and anything that's adaptable has better chances of survival. Anything that is too rigid will actually crumble and crack and it's over, right? So thank you for really sharing that. And it's funny you said about the comfort and not, you know, being comfortable with uncomfortable. We just literally just released a show that is talking about that. Literally the title was about that. So it is a big piece. So thank you so much for, and by the way, you see how it is, it all lines up. All the things that we discussed about this morning, you know, they all tie to each other and probably tie into any other thing that you're probably listening or watching right now. And if it has to do with motivation, inspiration, guidance, and instruction on how to operate in the business world and the personal world, as you said, this is not just for one thing. It applies to everything around us. So, Bright, thank you so much. I mean, just great wisdom in this morning. And you know what? You know, I'll take it. I'm enjoying it. And I say I'm the first customer of my own, or client of my own shows here, because I apply these things and it's a constant reminder. And I re-listen to those shows. It keeps me going and motivated. And really, just sometimes it helps me realign, because sometimes we get distracted. So, you know, again, I'm sharing this as a personal experience. Every time I do these things, you know, sometimes, you know, like you tend to forget certain, you know, tips and tricks, right? And you hear them like, oh yeah, I think I got to do stuff. You know, maybe I tweak here, tweak that. It's like tuning like your guitar, your violin, whatever, your piano, and it works. You get better outcomes, right? So, but not dreading the outcomes, just getting tuned up better. So, Brian, thank you so much for the time, for the work you do, and certainly we'll stay in touch, and hopefully we'll maybe see each other in the corporate world and in a different realm, you know. So that's a possibility there.
Folks, that would be great. Thank you so much again for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Oh, no, it's a true honor and a pleasure. And, you know, folks, again, just, you know, the link will be in the description of the show. Do click, you know, click there. Do link up with Brian. Follow his work. Get the newsletter. And, yes, if you do need assistance in these you know, realms and this space, you know, is available. So let's get in touch with him. And stay safe, dude, you know, for the work you do. And I don't know if you're going to do any more stunts, but, you know how to do it well. And now I'm going to have to track you, man. I'm going to have to watch some of the movies that you...
Yeah. Well, I still do stunts. Yeah. I just worked this past Thursday on a TV show out here in Nashville. It's a new one called Scarpetta. It hasn't come out yet. It's a Nicole Kidman TV show. But yeah, that's something that I'm still in the game and will be for as long as my body holds out and people are willing to hire me, because I love it.
Just quickly, I know you leave it, but like, I mean, that is some serious stuff that you do. I mean, throwing yourself out of the vehicle and falling the right angle. I mean, I've wondered, I mean, do they have like cushions for you guys when you fall, or just like you really hit the ground running?
Sometimes, but no, I mean, if it wasn't hard, then they wouldn't need the stunt people, you know? So,
well, that's true.
Oh, yeah. It's, I mean, some you get more padding than others. Sometimes you just hit the concrete, and that's how it works. So, well, it just depends.
Well, listen, I got to give you credit, man. It's something you love, and, you know, not for the faint of heart, not for everyone, but certainly, you know, you're doing it, you loved it. And that's the other, you pursued what you loved, and that's a beautiful thing. All right, that's it, the end. That's the end of today's show, folks. Thank you so much for being with us, for watching, for listening. I'm Eric Neal. We'll be talking soon. We'll be on the topic. Bye for now.